Well, good morning. We're going to dismiss kids to children's church. So, kids, if y'all want to head on out, Miss Tony is in back. This is my first sermon as a 50-year-old. Wow. That's why I got to have that chair. I got to sit down a little bit. I need a cane. I really do need hearing aids, but we'll talk about that some other time. Oh, my eyes are so bad, girl. Woo! Can you see the print from there? I don't know if you can or not. All right, well, we are in the last week of our series on the real God. It's where we've looked at different characteristics. Of God. We've been doing it in our Sunday school classes. We've been doing it in our youth ministry and in our children's ministry. We've talked about the love of God. We've talked about the goodness of God, the sovereignty of God, the justice of God. It's just been wonderful. Today is our last Sunday, so Sunday school teachers, you got to get a lesson ready for next week. No more all together. But today we're going to talk about probably the characteristic that holds all of it together. This is the characteristic of faithfulness. This is that thought that you know that you can trust God, that he's going to love you. He's going to have goodness. He's going to be sovereign and in control because he is faithful. No matter what we do, we can't affect the faithfulness of God. I wrote down this week as just a working definition of faithfulness that then they did it in Sunday school, and I just loved that definition. I just grabbed it. God's steadfast affection and his allegiance to those who've accepted the gospel of Jesus Christ. And then I put an exclamation, no matter what. We serve a God who is faithful. When we place our trust in God, we don't have to worry, is he going to go back on it? And I think because of the society we live in and relationships that we have sometimes, we kind of get that thought, you know, what do I do? What could I do that's going to make God change his mind about me? And that kind of sits in the back of our head. I want to ask a question this morning, kind of start with just to see how many people this happened to, because this is going to connect in just a second. But let's have a moment of confession. How many of you, sometime between the ages of 5 and probably right before you got your driver's license, how many of you ever ran away from home? Did anybody ever run away? Isn't that interesting? Yeah, have you ever, yeah, that's something, it's kind of something that all kids do. You know, it's, oh yeah, are you pointing at people now? They ran away from home. It's something that all kids do. It's kind of a universal thing. Now, here's the key about running away from home. When you run away from home, it's not so much where you're going, right? It's what you're getting away from. You know, your mom or your dad did something, or they wouldn't let you do something. And so you didn't really think it out. You didn't go, oh, yeah, let me plan out where I'm going. So it's not so much about the where as it is, you know, what I'm getting away from. I asked Sam this morning. I said, Sam, did any of our kids ever do that? Did I miss it somewhere? And she said, Dad, I did one time. And I said, I don't remember that. She said, well, I wrote a runaway from letter home. I mean, a letter about running away from home. And she said, but I didn't know where to go, so I went under my bed. And I said, I don't even remember that. She said, well, I don't think anybody ever found the letter. And so eventually I calmed down and I came out. I think, did you say you still have the letter today? Is that right? Somewhere. Yeah, we don't know where to go. We just know that where we are, we want to get away from it. I heard a joke this week about a kid, and this guy, he was standing out in his front yard, and he said all of a sudden he saw this little 8, 9, 10-year-old kid just run past his yard. And you know, he recognized him as a neighborhood kid. And so he said, I wonder what that was. And he said, just a few minutes later, here comes that kid again. And he runs in front of his yard. And he said, man, that's strange. And so he said, about the fourth time that kid ran in front of his yard, he went out and said, son, what are you doing? He said, sir, I'm running away from home. He said, you're just going around the block in a circle. He said, I know. My mama won't let me cross the street. See, he didn't know where he was going. He just knew he wanted to get away. It's not about where we're going to. It's about getting away from where we are. And so my next question to you is, have you ever tried to run away from God? Have you ever tried to run away from God? See, I think this is another universal thing that we do. I wrote down, when you run away from God, you know better. You already know what God would say. But you go, you know, I want to do that anyway. There's something in my life, and I know what the Bible says about it. I know I'm not supposed to do that. I already know what God's going to do it, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to run away from what God tells me to do, and I'm just going to do my own thing. You might have run away to a relationship. You know, maybe there was a relationship, and you knew that God didn't want you involved in that relationship. But you said, you know, I don't want to be there with God. I want to go to this relationship. Maybe it's a financial decision you made, and you knew it was the wrong choice when you made it, but you said, I'm going to run away from God. Maybe a job choice. Maybe it's just an issue. You know, maybe there's just one issue. And you kind of say, hey, I believe in God. It's not like I'm an atheist. It's not like I'm agnostic. You know, I believe in God. I trust in God. I believe him totally in my life except this one situation. And in this one situation, I'm just going to run away from God in that situation. I was at a retreat about a week ago for moms who are post-abortive. I had abortions in their past. And I sat down by this lady, and she was my age. And as her story came out, as a teenager, she had had an abortion. She didn't want to. Her mom made her. And for the next 35 years, she tucked this away, this guilt, the shame that she had. And as I visited with her, the thing that just really caught me was she was a volunteer in her youth ministry as an adult. I think Methodist maybe, because she said she was very involved in the Walk to Emmaus. I don't know if y'all have ever heard of that before. I mean, she had done some really neat spiritual things in her life. And I think she was completely right about all those spiritual things. I don't think she was faking it. I think she had a loving, connected, growing relationship with God, except in one area where she didn't know if the good news of Jesus Christ could cover this choice that she made. So in that one issue, she ran. She said, I'm not going to tell anybody. I'm not going to talk to anybody. You know, when I was visiting with the people that do these retreats, they said the oldest person they've had was an 82-year-old lady. And she was dying. And she said, please let me go on this retreat because there's been something I've kept secret for 60 years. And she said, I've never let God in to heal me in that area. Do you run from God? Maybe you run from God because you don't want to miss out. Maybe you kind of say, hey, there's some things in my life that I really want to do. College students, high school students. You kind of think, listen, if I go with God right now, it's not that I don't want to be with God, but right now there's some really cool things that I might have the opportunity to do. And if I really live my faith in that opportunity, I probably shouldn't do those. So just for now, a time period, I'm going to run from God. I'll come back sometime. I'll circle back around, but right now I want to run from God. You know, some of us, I heard a pastor say this one time. He said, we run because we confuse life with God. We confuse life with God. And we look at our life and go, you know, life's not going so good right now. And in our mind it connects that, well, if life isn't going good, then God's not good. And because our life isn't going good, we're going, man, I don't even want, you know, I believe the Bible, but I don't even want anything to do with it. Have you ever run from God? Have you ever run from God? Now, here's the key that I want you to hear, and this is how we're going to connect it. I want you to know today that Jesus Christ loves you. And the good news of Jesus Christ isn't about just your salvation. But the good news about Jesus Christ is that he has the ability to be with you in any part of your life. And he's faithful. And he's going to always be there, even if you run. And if you'll ever just stop, if you'll ever just kind of wait, then you're going to see that God's there all the time. Let's look at a story of the world-class runner of the Bible. Now, last week, Joel, I was here. I had taken that conference break. Really, it was a wonderful weekend. I then went into a whole nother conference that was really cool. And so I knew I wasn't going to preach last week. So the week prior to Joel preaching, I got this sermon ready. You know, I was working on it. And I said, I'm going to preach out of Jonah. And then Joel gets up last week and says, turn to Jonah. I went, oh, man. Now, good thing, though, is Joel preached out of chapter 3 and 4, right? I'm going to 1 and 2. So this is the prequel, all right? This is the Star Wars, the next three that were just horrible. Anyway, okay, we're going to the prequel to what you heard last week, and we're going to look at the book of Jonah. So if you want to turn to Jonah, or you can just look in the handout. We put all the scriptures right there. If you open up that handout, you're going to see if you want to find it in your Bible, really the best way to find Jonah is don't go to the front of the Bible, go to the New Testament, and then just go back about 7 books, and you'll hit Jonah a lot faster than if you go from the front trying to find it. It's right at the end of the Old Testament, or right near the end. And in Jonah chapter 1, verse 1, now y'all know the story. It's that fish story that we hear about in the Bible. Now, I'm not going to spend any time on this, but I heard someone say this one time, and I think it's just so neat. He said, so many people, they get kind of worked up about the fish. Could that really happen? You know, could there really be a whale that swallowed somebody and they could live for 3 days? And, you know, this particular pastor, Andy Stanley, he said this. He said, Jonah's mentioned in a lot of other parts of the Bible. In fact, Jesus Christ talks about Jonah. And if it was just a story, Jesus didn't mention that. But more than that, I love what he said. He said, you know, today we have these nuclear submarines that can stay underwater with a whole village of people for 3 months. And if the created can create a submarine that could take people underwater for months and months, couldn't God create a fish where someone could stay alive for 3 days? I mean, I think so. It doesn't matter on how he did it, but I want y'all to hear the story because the story's good. And we're going to hear it as adults rather than kids. Chapter 1, verse 1. The word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai, go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it because its wickedness has come up before me. Now, Nineveh in these days was just an evil, evil city. They did not believe in God. They did not worship God. A lot of the prophets of the Old Testament, which Jonah would be a prophet is someone that comes to you and kind of points out something that you're doing wrong. A lot of those prophets, God sent to the people of Israel. Now, it wasn't a great job, you know, going and telling people what they're doing wrong, but there's probably just a little bit of comfort going to people that you know. So when the prophets went to Israel, at least, you know, they're talking to people that have their same background, that believe in God, even though they might be going the wrong direction. There's a little bit of comfort there. But here, God tells his prophet Jonah, I want you to go to Nineveh. Now, Nineveh, like I said, evil city. In fact, as scholars have looked through history, this is what they found out about Nineveh. Nineveh, their gold medal, the thing that they would win the gold medal at if it was an Olympic sport, was skinning someone alive. That's what they were known for, that they had developed the art of torture, of taking someone's skin off and keeping them alive. That's how evil they were. And so when you read this and you put yourself in Jonah's place, You know, Jonah says, you know, hey, I'm a prophet, God. I don't mind telling your people. But all of a sudden, God says, I want you to go to Nineveh. It changes a little bit. And you kind of go, really? That's the place you want me to go? And so we see in verse number 3, but Jonah ran away from the Lord and headed for Tarshish. Am I saying it right? Tarshish. What's so big about Tarshish? If you could kind of picture the Mediterranean Sea there, or that area, you know, where Israel was, you had the huge body of water. Tarshish, if you could see Israel, which is right on the coastline, on the eastern part of this huge body of water, Tarshish was about 500 miles this way inland. And so, I'm sorry, Nineveh, I said it wrong. Nineveh was about 500 miles this way inland from Jerusalem. What the Bible says is when Jonah decided to run, he went to Tarshish, which was as far as you could possibly go by boat in the opposite direction. If you can kind of picture Spain, Tarshish was at the bottom of Spain. In fact, the only thing that you could buy a ticket to was the known trade route. You could get outside the trade route, but then you have to basically buy your own boat and go off into the unknown. The farthest ticket that you could buy from Nineveh was Tarshish. And so as we see this, here's what we see. We see Jonah going, God, I don't want to do that. I'm not saying I don't believe in you. I'm not saying that what you've got isn't a good idea. He said, can't you just bring your judgment on them without me going and talking to them first? And if your thought is for me to go to this place where most likely I will die in a torturous type way, he said, I've got another idea. I'm running. And I'm not just running kind of away from you. I'm running in the complete opposite direction. Now, if we stop just for a second right there, when we run from God, don't we do that? Don't we do the exact same thing? Oh, God, you don't want me to date this kind of person? I'm going to date this kind of person, right? You don't want me to do this thing with my finance? You know what? I'm going to do the complete opposite. I'm going to do that. We kind of get this mentality. If I'm running from God, I'm just going to go the opposite way from which God told me. And so if we look at the verse here, it says, but Jonah ran away from the Lord and headed toward Tarshish. He went down to Joppa where he found a ship bound for that port. And after paying the fare, he went aboard and sailed for Tarshish to flee from the Lord. Now here's the other point I want to bring up. How crazy is this? I'm going to run from God. I'm going to run from the creator of the earth. I'm going to run from the guy that makes storms. I'm going to run from the guy that created the ocean and all those waves and all those large animals that are. And I've got an idea. I'm going to put myself in the most dangerous situation that I can possibly think of. Isn't that what he did right there? He didn't just say, I'm going to get on a boat for a little while. I'm going to get on the farthest boat ride that I could possibly get on to get away from God. Here's your first fill in the blank. People that run from God. See if this sounds familiar. People who run from God run to the strangest places. Isn't that weird? I've talked to people that are running from God, and in the middle of them running from God, here's their thought. I think I'll get a divorce. Isn't that strange? I'm going to do something that will affect the rest of my life. Or maybe it's just, I'm going to marry somebody else. You know, that never works out bad, right? You know, I'm running from God. I know he doesn't want me in this relationship, so I'm just going to marry that person. You know, it's the strangest place. You see people who you go, you know, God, you know, I trust you in every area, but I don't trust you in my finances. So I'm going to do things in my finances that if anybody ever found out about it, I could pay a huge fines or possibly go to jail. You know, here you go. I'm going to turn my back on you, God, and I'm going to hope that nobody ever finds out about what I'm doing. And we kind of look at it. You know, if you stand back and you see someone else headed down that road, you go, wait a minute. You know, I know you still love God. I know you still, you know, you're still there. In fact, you probably still pray, right? You probably, it's not a prayer of surrender, but it's a prayer of, you know, help me, God, when things go crazy. But you're headed to a strange place, and you don't even see that. Why? Because when we run from God, we disconnect ourselves from the source of wisdom and truth. You see, if you want wise choices in your life, you need to stay connected from God, to God. But once you disconnect from God, you've disconnected from wisdom. And therefore, what's going to come out of that is you're going to go to a strange place. You're going to be in a dangerous situation. You're going to basically set yourself up and kind of pray, God, don't let them find out about this. See, when we run from God, we do that. We run from people and places that represent that wisdom and truth. You ever seen anybody do that? They start running from God, and suddenly they disconnect from their Sunday school or their small group. They stop coming to church. You just kind of look and you go, hey, you're the only place that you could get wisdom in this situation right now, you're disconnecting from. Maybe it's your family. And we've seen that a lot with students, you know, that all of a sudden they start making those bad choices, and then they stop calling home. And they might have those friends that could encourage them and to lift them up, but instead, they don't answer the phone when that friend calls, because they don't want to hear the wisdom, because they're running. When you run from God, you disconnect. Now, the next verse is important. Verse number 4, first 3 words, I want y'all to hear it. Then the Lord. In the middle of Jonah's running, has God given up on Jonah? No. And in the middle of your running, whatever you're running from, whatever you're holding on to, whatever you're not allowing the gospel of Christ to come in and to heal in your life, God hadn't given up on you either on that spot. And here's the truth. In whatever you're running from, you're going to have then the Lord moments. There's going to be time, like a parent going after a runaway child, that God's going to bring something into your life. Not to punish you, but to draw you back to Him. And so here it says, then the Lord sent a great wind on the sea, and such a violent storm arose that the ship was threatened to break up. All the sailors were afraid. Now don't miss that. All the sailors are afraid. These are men who, as a living, go out on the sea. Apparent trade route from Joppa all the way to Tarshish. These were the guys that did it on a weekly, monthly, yearly, whatever basis that they did it on. But for somewhere, they wanted you to know that this storm was so bad that those sailors had been through so much were afraid. It says, they cried out to their own gods, and they threw their cargo into sea to lighten the ship. Now here's the interesting part. It says, but Jonah had gone below deck, where he lay down and fell into a deep sleep. Now, what's Jonah doing? There's a storm that's so bad that sailors are on their knees praying. And Jonah says, well, that has nothing to do with me. I'm just going to go lay down. Here's what I want you to see. Your next blank. Runners are often the last to make the connection of the chaos going on in their life to their decision to run from God. You see, God brought a then, now God kind of moment into Jonah's life, but he didn't connect it. He didn't connect it with the chaos with his choice. And what I want to say to us is when we run from God, so often we are in the middle of a chaotic situation. But because we're disconnected from wisdom, we are like Jonah. And we kind of go, I don't see it. I don't see the connection. You had the captain of the boat came down, and it says, the captain went to him and said, how can you sleep? Get up and call on your God, and maybe he will take notice of us so that we will not perish. He even had someone in his life going, hey, buddy, is there any chance that your choices have made this chaos happen? Do you have people like that in your life? Is there someone right now knocking on your door saying, there's some chaos here? Is there something you're holding on to right now that you need to let go of? Do you need to call out to your God about some choices that you made? Hey, listen, parents, there are some choices that you can make that will not only affect your life, but affect your kid's life and possibly your grandkid's life. And I can tell you this much, your kids can see the chaos that you've created with your choices before you can see it. And they might be telling you that. And you're just kind of going, no, there's no way. You see, when we run from God, we disconnect the connection of our choices with the chaos that's surrounding our lives. The captain kind of convinces Jonah. He said, why don't you come on upstairs? We're having a prayer meeting. We've got our gods. You come on up, and we'll just have a big prayer meeting all together. You know, Jonah decides to do that. He joins them up on the deck. The sailors, not knowing what to do, they do this weird thing called casting lots. We don't really do this anymore, but this time, you know, they kind of rolled some stuff, and whoever it came upon, that would kind of tell them who God was mad at. And when they casted the lots, it came up on Jonah. And they looked at Jonah. And they said, what did you do? Jonah answered in verse number, where are we at? Verse number 9. Yeah, verse number 9. Says, he answered, I am a Hebrew, and I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and made the dry land. He knew, right? He knew God was in control of that. And finally, when he wakes up to this chaos, he goes, wait a minute. He said, yeah, the God I serve did. He made the land. He made the sea. Verse 10, this terrified them, and they asked, what have you done? For they knew he was running away from the Lord because he had already told them so. And the sea was getting rougher and rougher, so they asked him, what should we do to you to make this sea calm down? I don't know if Jonah, what he was thinking here, but he said, pick me up and throw me into the sea and it will become calm. I know it is my fault that this great storm has come upon you. Now, they kind of fault him a little bit. Oh, we can't throw this guy into the sea. Yeah, we can't just do that. But finally, in verse number 15, it says, then they took Jonah and threw him overboard, and the raging sea grew calm. And at this, the men greatly feared the Lord, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows to him. That's kind of cool that when you're running from God and the chaos happens, and suddenly other people start getting saved because they see how crazy you are. And got to go, man, if God wants him that much, it would do this much. You know, maybe this God is something we need to reckon with too. You know, I don't know what that picture looked like. You know, when you were in, when I was a kid, you know, here's the picture I had in my mind. You know, they threw him in, and he gets into the water, and you know, and he flails, and then he sinks, and after he sinks, finally everything kind of calms down. I heard someone one day say they had a better picture. They said this was a picture they had. They said they took Jonah, and the storm's going. They took Jonah, they threw him over, and he kind of kicks, and he kind of keeps his head above water for a few seconds, and finally the storm calms, and Jonah's just kind of bobbing there. And the guys on the boat say, oh, that worked. And they said, should we get him? And about that time, the music starts. Bom, 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 bom. You know, whoo, whoo. We know what's coming next. Before we get there, verse number 17, let's get there. It says, now the Lord. Here we go again. God said, I'm sending a storm because I want you, Jonah. He said, and I'm fixing to send something else. It says, now the Lord, in verse number 17, provided, people say, prepared a huge fish to swallow Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. Now I want to pause there for a second. The first thing I want to say is please hear this. In whatever area of your life that you're running from God, whether it's a situation, whether it's a time span, whether it's just a small little thing, whatever it is, you can run from God, but you can't outrun God. And I think it's beautiful that God prepared a fish. That meant God was already there. And he knew that Jonah was running. And he said, I'm going to create something to bring him back to me. God's creating something in your life right now, and whatever you're holding on to that you won't let him have, that'll bring you back to him. You can run, but you can't outrun God. Now, the next thing I want to say is how we view the storm and the whale will determine our view of God's faithfulness. Because we're kind of looking at the scriptures, you know, we know the end of the story. We know that Jonah doesn't die. We know that Jonah ends up where he's supposed to go, because we heard the Joel preach last week. So we know he's going to make it there. We know that actually the whale's going to get him to where he needs to go. It's almost like God said, all right, you know, instead of having to buy a whole nother ticket, you know, we're going to get you right to where you need to go. Don't worry about it. But Jonah didn't know this. All Jonah saw was a storm. And all Jonah knew that he just got ate by a whale. Now, how do you think about the things that God puts into your life to get you back home? Probably we think of it like Jonah does. And we think, oh God, you're going to kill me. Look, God, you're judging me. God, you know, this is it. What I've done has brought on the wrath of God. When in truth, the things that God did, when we could step back and view them, were a gift of grace that brought Jonah back to a safe place. How do you view the storms in your life? And I guess the next question, why did God put Jonah in the whale? The next verse says this, it says, from inside the fish, Jonah prayed to the Lord, his God. I bet he did. God put him in there to kind of think about it. To think about what he was doing. I mean, there couldn't have been a TV inside that whale. There wasn't internet. 3 days, he's in the belly of a whale. Just time to think. I want to share a story from last week. I'm at this retreat, and it's a beautiful thing. What they do is they pour the grace of God on these ladies and these men who've been involved in, who've had abortions in the past, things where they felt the guilt and the shame. You know, several of them in their stories, they would say, you know, they felt like the wrath of God. If they ever just went to that area and thought about it, they felt that God just hated them for what they did. Now, I'm not saying abortion's a good thing. It's a terrible thing. But I will tell you this, that God is faithful. And he loves his children. And so last week, we just poured grace on those ladies. And there was a man there also that had been part of an abortion when he was in college and just couldn't shake it. He was 60 years old. So they do all these, what they call living verses, and they read verses out of the Bible, and they dramatize the verses in kind of reading almost like a radio-type presentation of the verses. And then they have a physical thing that you could do to kind of personalize this grace that God was pouring on you. And like, you know, one thing was, you know, when the lady, they did the verse where the lady touched the hem of Jesus's robe. And then after dramatizing it, you know, kind of just through the story they told, then they had everybody come up and they had a robe in the middle of it. And they said, think about something, you know, and this, particularly for them, this issue. For me, I wanted to participate because it was my first one. So I've never had an abortion in my past. So I thought of other things that I was holding on to that I needed to let go of. And they said, just come up and touch the hem. Think about just the grace of God coming through your hand. What would that feel like? What would that feel like for that lady? And my favorite, they told the story of Lazarus. And when they told the story of Lazarus, they came around to each of us, and we were sitting on chairs. And when we came in for this particular time, on our chair was a sheet. And we sat on the sheet. And as we entered into that time of doing something physical to remind us of what that verse told us, they came to each of us, and they said, I want you to feel like you're in the tomb, like you're Lazarus. So they took that sheet, and they put it over our head, and everything goes a little bit dark. Now, earlier in the first session, they gave us a big rock. And the rock symbolized something that you're holding on to. And so, you know, I had a rock in my hand. And at any time they said, if you're ready to give up that rock, there's a big lake out there, and we'll all go out there together, and you'll chunk your rock in the lake. And we'd already had one opportunity, but I wanted to hold on to my rock. I kind of liked my rock. You know, it was smooth, and it kind of reminded me of things in my life, and I'm just kind of going, I'm not ready yet. You know, I was the pastor there, and I didn't take the first opportunity to chunk the rock. And they said, that's good. You know, don't just do it because everybody else is doing it. So there were several of us that still had our rocks. So I'm sitting there with a shroud over the top of me. And I'm holding the rock. And there's this pause where they just let God do what God's going to do. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm dead right now. I'm Lazarus. And I've got this rock in my hand. I'm dead, but I'm still holding on to this rock. And it suddenly hit me that when I'm dead, this rock means nothing. It doesn't. You know, what I was holding on to, what I was worried about, what I was thinking about, oh, what if people knew this? This rock, when I'm dead, means completely zero. It's a live problem, right? You're dead, it doesn't matter. And then all of a sudden, as I'm working through that, someone comes up and pulls the sheet off. And the pastor that was running it says, Blake, come out. You're alive. And I sit there going, why am I holding this rock? But I never stopped long enough and considered how meaningless this rock was until I'm thinking that has nothing to do once I'm dead. Only my relationship with Christ. And I come back to Jonah. And he's sitting in that belly of the whale, not knowing if God's going to get him out. And he just says, you know, this rock of being mad at those people over in Nineveh or worried about what they're going to do to me, it means nothing when I'm dead. And he threw his rock. And if you flip over, here's the prayer. He said, in my distress, I called to the Lord, and he answered me. From the deep in the realm of the dead, I called for help, and you listened to my cry. You hurled me into the depths, into the very heart of the sea, and the current swirled about me. All your waves and breakers, they swept over me. But you, Lord my God, brought my life up from the pit. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple, and those who cling to worthless idols. You get it? Turn away from God's love for them, but I, with shouts of grateful praise, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. I will say salvation. Good news, the love of Jesus Christ comes from the Lord. And the Lord commanded the fish, and it vomited Jonah on dry land. Such an interesting story of someone who runs. But God brings them to the point where they realize that that issue that they're running with is really meaningless. And they cast it down. And God immediately relieves them of that fear, releases them from that bondage. My question today is, what are you hanging on to? What are you running from God with right now? Can I get everybody to close your eyes? I want you to imagine two things in your hand right now. I want to imagine that rock. Your rock is different than anybody else's. What's that area of your life that you're running from God with? Is it a relationship? Is it something that God's called you to? That you said, God, I don't want to go there. Is it something you're scared of? Is it something just that you go, man, just this time in my life, God, I don't want to think about that. You know, what is your rock? And while your eyes are closed, that rock's in one hand. And in your other hand is a white flag of surrender. Now I want you to imagine that shroud over your head. I want to imagine that God's got you in the grave. And your question today is, how important is that rock in your hand? And the invitation today is to throw down that rock and wave that white flag. And I'll promise you, God will take you to the place where you're going to find out you needed to be the whole time. Will you throw down your rock? I'm going to let you think about it just for a second.